Hi, I'm Russell and I work at The Video Store, the place that you can go to once a week when you're looking for something to watch. When the store is quiet, behind the counter, I get to talk to my friends about the films and the series that we're loving. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop.
Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV?
How's it?
Hello.
Good morning.
How you guys doing?
Yeah, good. Tired? Yeah, tired. My body's broken. It's been a hectic past month.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Okay, we'll get into it. Welcome to the video store. Thank you for wandering in to what is perhaps the last video store on earth. We have ourselves a Graham Hackney.
Good morning.
Who is an editor and the producer of this show.
Hmm.
We've got ourselves a Perrin P-Dog Fish.
Hello, hello, hello.
Who is a multi-film film person.
Yeah.
And we'll get into what might have kept you up all night this past weekend.
Yeah.
And my name is Russell. I am the owner of The Bioscope, which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. And we give up our busy lives to work behind the counter of our video store so that we can talk about everything and catch up and just be like best pals.
Yes.
We are sipping on iced lattes.
Oh, yeah. Cold coffee is my preferred form of coffee.
Okay. Oh, really?
I love cold coffee.
Wow. I must say, this is delicious.
Yeah.
And it's channeling a little bit of Zoolander energy for me.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm having a orange mocha frappuccino.
And is that when they have the petrol fight?
The petrol fight, yeah.
And they drive down the road and they're sort of like open air, cheap.
Yeah.
I feel like I would drive. I feel like Graham would be next to me, leaning over like singing Jitterbug. And I think, Perrin, you'd be at the back like standing up holding the handlebars. Yeah. Like, who did that? It was one of the like... Who was that guy?
I haven't seen it in so long.
No, the dude in the back is a famous actor. He's part of that family of like Swedish actors.
Skarsgård.
Yeah, that was
the that one of them? No way.
Of course it was. Yeah.
Bull Skarsgård.
No,
Bull.
It was Alexander.
Alexander, wow.
He was Sven or like one of the fucking...
I need to watch it again. I loved Zoolander. Yeah. Jeez, like the second one, not so much, but you're so good.
To explain the range of The Bioscope, I have often had to call on the fact that we've done like a Zoolander quote along.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it's like, this isn't just pretentious art house stuff.
No, it's fun, you know?
Yeah, we like to have a bit of fun.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, what are we going to chat about today?
What are we going to chat about today?
Okay. I think it's interesting to talk about Tron.
Yes, even though none of us have seen it.
I've got the buzzy Netflix limited series docu that everyone's talking about, which is the Victoria Beckham three-parter.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, I haven't seen that one yet.
But I can tell you guys about that.
Boy, I do not pay attention to what's happening on Netflix.
That's okay.
Every time you bring up something from Netflix, I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's interesting, and this is what I want to chat about, is how these docus tend to dictate the conversation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just because it's so, what is the big fancy word? Ubiquitous. It's sort of, it's so, a big mainstream Netflix docu can kind of shape economies.
Mm. Okay.
Even if it's just for a week.
Yes.
You know, they can do it. P-Dog, what have you watched recently?
I've watched some, like, I thought maybe it was a quiet week, but I mean, I haven't had a chance to watch a lot, but I watched some really good stuff in the past week.
Cool. So,
okay.
Yeah, some series, a bit of everything.
It would be nice to talk about him.
Yeah.
Because you've seen it. Sure. And so it'd be cool to actually chat with someone else in the in the crew about that film. Last week's episode was with this friend of mine, Zach, who is the writer of this big Hollywood, you know, production. Mm. And there's nuance to it. It's quite a unique film. It's challenging some genres, it's trying some things. so we can chat about that.
Cool.
But let's start.
We can also finally talk about Alien Earth a little bit.
Oh, cool.
We meant to talk about it in our last recording, but
yeah, no, you must.
We ran out of time.
You must fucking bully us into talking about it.
Just jam it in there.
Yeah, jam it in there.
Okay. All right. Should we start with a little, hey, did you guys see?
Yes. Sure.
All right. Who wants to start?
Let me see. I can get us going. Oh, hey, did you guys see they announced there will be, after 20 years, a second Simpsons movie?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it's in like many years' time.
It's in 2027.
Which is wild.
So.
Why does it need so long?
Well, I suppose animation takes a long time.
But does it? They bang out so much Simpsons.
Yeah, but I mean, an episode of an animated show takes like 9 to 12 months to animate.
They do it like well in advance.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, it's a sequel to a movie that no one initially asked for. I mean, so I'm a huge Simpsons fan. Like particularly from seasons 2 to 9, some of 10.
How many have they been in total?
It's like 37 now.
36? Yeah, it's in the 30s.
I think it's the longest running animated show.
Yeah, by far. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, like, as much as I love The Simpsons, it's mostly been terrible than good.
Yeah, it's been bad for longer than it was good.
Yeah, but when it was good. So when I list my favorite TV shows of all time, The Simpsons is routinely in my top three, purely based on those seasons.
Yeah.
Every episode was fucking fantastic. Even those episodes where they look back at things
like clip shows
were funny.
Yes,
because you know?
They always had a framing device.
Yeah, and it was always
clever.
It was very meta.
Why was it so good?
The writing.
The writing was phenomenal.
The writing on that show was incredible.
Animation was incredible. Yeah. The show started getting really bad when they started making Homer just so stupid all the time.
Yeah.
So Homer's stupid all the time in the show, but like he's got
something redeeming.
He's got something underneath.
Mm, he's well-meaning even if he's misguided.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I mean, you look at some of who was writing the show back in the day. I mean, you've got Conan O'Brien wrote some of the most famous episodes. Greg Daniels, who's a comedy legend, he was one of the creators. He was a creator on Parks and Rec, The Office, King of the Hill. He's like a heavyweight.
Yeah,
you know?
So it was John Schwartzwelder.
John Schwartzwelder wrote.
He's written more episodes than anyone else.
Yeah, he's routinely like cameoed in episodes as well. It's just growing up as well. When I first started collecting DVDs, I bought the Simpsons box sets.
Same.
And also the best commentary tracks ever.
Yes.
It's very rare when every single episode has a commentary track, and The Simpsons did that, and the Conan O'Brien ones are hysterical.
Yeah.
But I mean, that show, like season 5 in particular, has my favorite Simpsons animation style. The pupils were a bit bigger.
Okay.
So good.
Okay.
It's quotable. Like I can quote pretty much every Simpsons episode.
There is
verbatim.
A Simpsons quote for literally every situation in life. Because they've done everything.
Yeah, literally everything. Almost everything I'll quote.
And I think perhaps some of its charm was the fact that it was representing America.
Yeah, 100%.
Because Springfield as a town was, you know, there's a Springfield in every state almost.
Yeah.
It's the most sort of common town, and in this little town has these characters which were very famously sort of American characters.
Yeah.
Also, like in terms of adult animation, like we think of it now, like
it's tame compared.
Exactly. But at the time, like it was kind of controversial.
It was a game changer. I mean, I remember there was an episode where George Bush Sr. and his wife they move across the street.
Yes.
And they didn't voice them because they famously hated The Simpsons.
Yeah.
I know they wrote to, I think it's Barbara Bush.
Mm.
They wrote to her as Marge Simpson in real life, saying like, oh, we'd love to have you over and stuff. And that like they kind of played that into the show kind of thing.
Jesus.
And it was just like really, really good. Like, but also with The Simpsons, also, I mean, you just look at how those early seasons, it's just like we said, the writing is just so good. It's not just them. It's all these side characters are hysterical. Like the only show I can compare it to in terms of doing a whole town of side characters so well as Parks and Recreation.
Okay.
So, you know, where like everyone, like that's why I prefer Parks and Rec to The Office, is that the world of story is bigger and also the side characters aren't so, like The Office, the side characters kind of get annoying. Like they're not very interesting.
The Office is quite contained because it literally has to be contained, in the right? Yeah.
But Parks and Rec
can
it's like
the whole town. Yeah.
It's like The Simpsons in terms of that, you know. So
I guess South Park channels the same energy.
Yeah, kind of. The thing is, I can't speak much on South Park because I never got into South Park.
Okay.
But yeah, The Simpsons movie, I didn't even like The Simpsons movie.
I just remember the spider pig joke and
did you also not like the movie?
I thought the movie was okay.
Yeah, it's
not
fine.
As good as like the best seasons.
Yeah,
because it was better than the show was at the time.
Yeah, 100%, because they got a lot of the old guard back to write it.
Okay.
But interestingly, there should have been a Simpsons movie around season 4, like 93, 94. Camp Krusty was supposed to be a Simpsons movie.
Oh.
Yeah.
That would have made sense, actually.
Yeah, so that episode, Bart and Lisa go to Camp Krusty, which is Krusty the Clown's summer camp.
Yeah.
But it's a Krusty camp. It's like awful.
Yeah, it basically turns into Lord of the Flies.
Yeah, Lord of the Flies, basically. So that was supposed to be the first one, and I think that would have made sense because they would have been striking while the iron was hot.
Yeah.
That's when The Simpsons was at the very peak of their powers, you know?
Yeah. But I was going to say, the other thing about The Simpsons is it was pretty much the first show, at least in American television, to kind of show a dysfunctional family.
Yeah.
Like families, like the family units in sitcoms are always like perfect.
Yeah.
Ironically, the thing that it was compared to a lot was The Cosby Show.
That's weird.
Which was Bill Cosby's sitcom, where it was like this perfect little like family, where by the end of every episode, everything is like wrapped up perfectly and the status quo is returned. You know, The Simpsons was this like kind of messed up family that was like much more real.
It was almost like a counterculture family show, sitcom.
But the only thing that could give me hope for this is if they do kind of what they did with the movie and bring back a bunch of the old writers. Like bring Conan O'Brien back.
Yeah, exactly.
Bring John Swartzwelder back.
Yeah, no, that'd be great. Because, it's just right now, I mean, admittedly, I haven't watched Simpsons for a while, new seasons, because they're just not good anymore.
They're like some interesting episodes.
Yeah.
When they kind of break the rules of The Simpsons.
Yeah.
I think the biggest problem with The Simpsons is it has these rules of the characters aren't allowed to age. Nothing's allowed to actually change.
But that's what I hate as well. And I understand because it's been running for so many years and because characters can't age, I hate that they're rewriting the lore, so to speak,
like the back, like they
the
have to move their stories up.
So
like originally they were like kids in like the
70s. They were teenagers in the 70s, and that was like a lot of my pop culture references come from The Simpsons. So like I know a lot of like American pop culture stuff because of The Simpsons.
It was originally set in the 70s.
Well, no, they like Homer and Marge were teenagers in the 70s.
Yeah, so that's
like, from the original timeline.
Yeah,
they're adults in the show, but they grew up in the 70s. But now as the show, as we've moved forward in time,
they've
and the characters
that.
Have an age, they were now teenagers in the 90s.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make sense.
Yeah, so like I remember watching a backstory episode where like they college kids in 2000s, and I was like, I hate this so much.
I really don't like it.
It's not funny. Like, at least make it funny,
you know?
And it just wasn't. It was just like, oh, this is what was happening at the time. And the thing with like, sorry, you wanted to say something?
I was going to say, like, when they talking about them being like locked in these rules, when they break the rules is when the show manages to be interesting again.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever watched A Serious Flanders.
Which one's that?
It's from 33, I think.
No,
it's a two-part episode where they just, it's like an entirely different universe, basically, where it's basically a like a Fargo-style episode.
Oh, cool.
Where like they tell this whole backstory about Flanders' grandfather was like a corrupt sheriff in the town. But they bring in new characters and they kill characters off.
Oh, wow.
And all that sort of thing. But it's like,
so
it's like self-contained. Like it doesn't exist in like the main timeline.
Cool.
But I'm like, do that more.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, do that more. It's really good.
I mean, the worst episode from the Golden Era run, I think it was season 9. So like I said, the last great season was season 8.
Oh, season 8 is perfect.
Season 9 was really good. Season 10 was
it starts to drop off, yeah.
Yeah. There's the worst episode, and it's an episode that the writers and creators like openly admit they fucking hate.
Yeah.
Is when they show who Seymour Skinner really is.
Oh, yes.
Who?
The principal. at the school.
Yeah. I can't picture him.
Yeah, so he, the whole backstory, the whole part of his character trait is that he was a Vietnam vet, but he's a very, like, prim and proper, like, follow the rules guy. Yeah. He listens to his mother all the time. It's, there's a running joke that it's almost like a psycho situation.
Yes.
But he was like a Vietnam vet, and there's a funny, like, there's funny insights into his past where, like, he really went through the most fucked up, like, Vietnam, like, flashback stuff, but then like he changes back to normal.
Yeah.
like there's a sequence where he's talking about, he's like, they held me for 3 months in a tiger's cage in water, fed nothing but rice, shrimp and rice, prawns, and three kinds of, like, seven kinds of spices. He's like, I came close to madness when I couldn't find the recipe.
Yeah, trying to recreate
in America,
the recipe. Yeah.
But they just can't get the spices right. It's so good.
Yeah.
I think that's a good place to end. It's like, it's just how absurd and subtle, but also very smart the humor is.
Yeah.
I had no idea there were that many worms in the can.
No,
I could do a whole episode on this.
Yeah, we should actually. It's easily. A great show.
If we still working behind the counter in 2 years' time,
I'm pretty sure Gad's a big Simpsons fan as well. Okay. Yeah.
Cool.
He gives off the energy, you know.
He does.
Yeah.
It has, hey, did you guys see? It's been confirmed that Avatar 3 will be 3 hours and 12 minutes long.
It's about as long as the previous one.
Shocker. Yeah. But also, with VFX heavy movies like that, they tend to be like 25 minutes of credit.
Yeah, that's true.
So, like, whenever I see a movie, is like, especially these days, credits are getting longer. So, if you watch a movie from like the 60s, and it says it's 97 minutes. It's 97 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, like the
maybe 96 minutes.
Yeah, the credits will be like 30 seconds, or it'll be burnt into the beginning. You know?
I was about to say, often it's like passive scenes of the city.
Yeah, with the credits, like
sort of.
Script girl, you know. Yeah. That's like the 50s and 40s, but like, the 3 hours and 12. When is that? That's coming out this year.
Yeah. December. Yeah.
Jeez, like, did he shoot the fourth one as well?
I think they've done some of it, but they haven't completed.
Yeah, because I know the guy who played what's the name, the army man.
Stephen Lang. Tough,
yeah, I remember because they were shooting like three movies back to back.
Yeah,
and he said like it wasn't done chronologically, story wise. So like they shot some of the third movie here, and then the second movie here. And he said he often had no idea what the hell was going on because he's like, "Oh, like, this is the scene where you do this." He's like, "Wait, what?"
Yeah,
like,
as long as somebody knows what the fuck's going
exactly.
on,
exactly.
And you must tell me whether I've done it right.
Like I know exactly. Michelle Yeoh has shot all of her scenes, but she's not in the third movie.
Oh,
she's
crazy.
In 4 and 5, but she's already done all of her stuff.
That's wild.
Yeah.
I think because they know it's going to take so long.
Yeah, I think these movies take a long time to
but
make.
But I think James Cameron's hit that groove now where he's like, okay, it's almost like he's committed that I'm only going to make Avatar movies now.
Yeah.
He's doing a,
a
nuclear bomb
movie.
Yeah. So, yeah, but I mean, I think
that'll only happen after Avatar is done.
Yeah. I mean, he's still, how old is James Cameron? He's like
in his
60s.
Yeah.
So he's still got time.
Yeah.
You know, for filmmakers, you still have time.
But are you excited about Avatar? Do you give a shit?
I like them. I think they're impressive movies.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll watch it on IMAX.
Yeah, I was about to say, for a few reasons,
you
it's
watch
not
it for
a
spectacle.
It's not a bioscope movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not, I don't care. Like, I watched, you watched it at Cole's birthday with him, right? Yeah, he invited me, but I couldn't make it.
Yeah, Cole's birthday has often been an Avatar party.
Yeah.
Because
they've always coincided.
Yeah, so like, when you watched it, did it have that high frame rate bullshit?
Yes.
Oh my God.
It was so weird. Because it's a
so
variable frame rate as well.
Yeah.
It changes.
Yeah, so it's like jarring.
It's so, I was like, what the hell
so
am I looking at?
So it looks like, you know, on Samsung TVs where it's got the Smooth Motion Plus bullshit.
Yeah,
so
it looks like it was shot on like a DV cam.
Yeah, everything looks like a soap opera, right? It's called the soap opera effect.
Yeah.
I saw that for the first time with The Hobbit.
Yeah.
Where I was like, this looks like Days of Our Lives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird.
No, I was
the
like...
Bold, the bold and the beautiful.
I was wincing with Avatar. I was like,
yeah, the thing that
I
threw
can't
me off,
do cause this.
Because it switches between 24 and 48.
Yeah, and
but
I just...
It feels arbitrary.
Because I know the reason why they do it is to make the 3D look smoother and more like lifelike, but it just felt so odd. And then when they changed
jarring.
It back, it was like jittery, like noticeably so. But like you said, they're big... impressive looking movies. I just think the story's lacking every time. I hate Sam Worthington's. Is it Sam Worthington?
Worthington.
Worthington. That's wrong, Sam. Yeah. Sam Worthington. I hate his American accent.
It always sounds fake. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm
You know, the famous thing about that role was that it was offered to
Matt Damon. Yeah.
And he was going to be offered something like 10% and he was of like, Avatar's earnings.
He would have made like hundreds of millions.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's also, that movie is mainly the reason why, I mean, also Avengers and Guardians. Zoe Kravitz is like, I think she's considered the highest grossing actress of all time.
Zoe Saldana.
Yeah. Not Zoe Kravitz, sorry. Yes, I'm getting my names.
Yeah, because she's in Avatar, she's in Guardians, she's in Avengers.
Yeah.
She's in the first Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, shoot, I forgot.
Yeah. But when there was a Scarlett Johansson film that came out earlier this year, Jurassic World.
Oh,
they then gave Scarlett Johansson that title.
Yeah, it pushed her into
saying she is
one.
The biggest box office actress, actor.
But I mean, the only other...
I mean, it's stupid because they're not carrying these movies.
Yeah, because the only other box office smashes that I can think of from her, like, massive of the Avengers movies. Yeah, what else?
Avengers, I mean, because she's in a bunch of Marvel stuff. She's like Iron Man 2, she's in Captain America.
Yeah, that's true.
Doesn't matter. It's a silly thing. Have you got one, P-Dog?
Yeah. Sorry.
Bop, bop, beep, bop.
Yeah, so Michael Mann's Heat. Oh, hey, did you guys see? Did you guys see? Michael Mann's Heat 2 has picked up steam.
Yeah.
And it looks like Amazon MGM is circling it. With DiCaprio to star, like attached to it.
Yeah.
I know Adam Driver has been floated around for
Austin
it as well.
Butler as well.
Yeah.
Will this be De Niro and prequel. Pacino younger?
Yeah, it's a prequel. So it's based on, Michael Mann wrote the sequel book.
Yeah. Apparently it's great.
I've got it. It's on my TBR, nice. But I haven't had a chance to read it. Apparently it's really good, but the only thing that makes me nervous is Michael Mann hasn't made a legitimately really good movie in quite a while now. Ferrari was fine.
Yeah, I never saw it.
No, I didn't dig Ferrari. I watched it. I watched it on the plane. But I'm also now realizing you can't trust the movies you watch on the plane because they edit a lot of shit.
Yeah.
They take out a lot of stuff, especially if you're on Emirates.
Yeah.
They take out swear words, sex scenes.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, let's take out the sex. It makes sense. I understand, because you don't want a little kid next to you going like, what the fuck? But if there was some way that, like, you know, visually it could just come to you, then,
There's been so many great, like, funny, unintentionally funny censorship moments. Famously, Die Hard 2, where he says, but this was on TV, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. But they changed it to yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon.
Right.
And everyone's like, who the fuck is Mr. Falcon?
Yeah, that's an odd one.
Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon. And then...
it could be Mother.
My favorite one is The Big Lebowski, when Walter, John Goodman's character, is smashing kid's car. This is what you get when you fuck a stranger in the ass. This is what you get. And then they changed it. This is what you get when you meet a stranger in the Alps.
What?
Oh, it's so funny, especially when you hear it.
They include those on the DVDs for like Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz and those movies. They include the...
Oh, the censored versions?
Yeah.
Is any one that you can recall?
I can't remember any of them, but they like have like a reel where it's like all the times they've had to like replace swear words. They're really funny.
The thing is, like, do you know what's crazy? Because I mean, I know you guys will attest to this as well, is that... So obviously growing up, I remember we had beta tapes and we had VHS, obviously.
Yeah.
But we would record when this was before Mnet everything. So this was like still around the censorship time, right?
Right.
So this was like early 90s. And we'd record like movies on TV. So we'd record Trading Places, National Lampoons. When we watched the DVDs years later, because those were uncensored, we were shocked at the level of nudity and swear words and shit like that. So like Trading Places, there's a fucking topless scene with Jamie Lee Curtis.
Ooh.
That we had no idea was there. When we saw it, we're like, what the hell is this? Also, National Lampoon's is a like...
Well, that's famously like a cheeky movie.
Yeah, yeah, but there's like a nude swimming scene. Oh, no, his wife is in the shower and you see her topless.
Yeah.
That wasn't on the VHS.
South Africa, definitely like white South Africa, was very conservative.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, it was all about the kerk on the Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean...
I grew up where, like, in the sort of Woolies... You couldn't buy alcohol on Sundays.
Yes.
That's crazy.
My early childhood.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I remember that being a thing where it's like, okay, we can now buy wine on Sunday.
But the biggest censorship thing that I had was, like, shocked the system was, so Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is still my favorite John Hughes film. It's my favorite John Candy film.
I've never seen it.
It's so good. We should have a screening on Thanksgiving. We should have it.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's one of my favorite movies, full stop. There's a famous scene in there where everything's going wrong for Steve Martin's character. He's trying to get home in time for Thanksgiving. So flights are being canceled. John Candy's this annoying character that's always like stopping him from getting to his goals. And one of the scenes is he's walked across a parking lot and he is trying to get his rental car, but it was missing. So he's like furious. And he swears at this lady and it's just like 30 F-bombs in a row.
Right.
And... like, that's unheard of for a movie like that at the time. And that was not in the movie that we watched as a kid.
Mm. Sure.
Like, that scene was completely omitted. So, like, when I saw it, I was like, I don't know if I like this, you know. But, yeah, so you should show it for that.
That's interesting, man.
Apparently that new John Candy documentary is really good.
I watched
really
it last night.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
But we'll talk about that. But yeah, Heat 2, interesting to see what will happen because Heat is one of the best crime thrillers of all
phenomenal.
Time. The, without a doubt, the best shootout sequence ever in a film.
Mm. Cool. No, sometimes that lightning is just right in that bottle and you do it. I was going to say, just with swear words, it was interesting that even with something like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, there was none until Guardians of the Galaxy 2, I think.
Yeah, get in the fucking
or 3,
car.
Where he's
yeah.
like, just open the fucking door.
Yeah.
And it was necessary because it was quite funny.
Yeah, it was like a gag, yeah.
But it was just interesting that we got our first F-bomb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was, do you know what was great? Like you said, it wasn't a significant character moment like fuck you Thanos, and everyone's like yeah fuck you Thanos, was like literally like just a passing like get in the fucking car, like
it was a joke.
Yeah, really good.
Okay, I got one.
Go for it.
Hey, did you guys see Sinners has chosen to enter as a drama in the Golden Globes as opposed to musical comedy?
That makes sense.
Musical or comedy.
Yeah, the Golden Globes need to change those categories.
Yeah, it always winds up being...
It's
it makes
always
no
strange.
Sense.
Yeah.
This was brought up to just chat about that specifically.
Yeah.
Is that it's interesting that the Golden Globes does differentiate in film between a drama film or a musical comedy. Mm. As in musicals can only
slash
be...
Slash comedy, yeah.
As in musicals can only be comedic.
Yeah.
But I think we yet to really have...
But it's interesting because horrors often have to, the only category they are often placed into at that ceremony is comedy / musical.
Yeah.
Which is so strange.
And I think the other part of the part of the conversation that's interesting is how a film where you are blurring the lines would have to choose which one they probably have the best chance in.
Definitely.
Yeah. But that's also where category fraud comes into play. I mean, so with comedy / musical, I remember when The Martian was there. I think
that was the one that was famously...
Yeah. I think that one Best Picture director and the person who went up was like, wow, I didn't know this movie. I think Ridley Scott said, I didn't know this was a comedy. And everyone was like, yeah, why the fuck is this here?
It certainly was.
It's lighter.
It was lighthearted.
Tone, but
it certainly
it's
wasn't
not,
a drama.
It's not... yeah, but it's also not a comedy. You know what I mean? Like that. That's why the Oscars, the categories make more sense because Best Picture can be across the board, even though they're very biased in terms of what they pick. Horror famously, especially now that we're in the golden era of I hate this term, but heightened horror, elevated horror, is that like people are like, okay, start giving it its flowers. But then you look back in the past, why, like The Shining was never, The Shining won fucking Razzies.
Yeah.
You know, fucking Rosemary's Baby should have been a player at the Oscars. Mm-hmm. Psycho should have been a player at the Oscars, you know. But the thing with category fraud, like it's not just the Golden Globes, it's across the board, like the Emmys and the Golden Globes, I suppose. The Bear is not a fucking comedy.
Yes.
And it's consistently winning best comedy, best comedy actor. Like it's, and I'm critics and voters are starting to, even since season one, they were like, it's got funny moments, but it's not a comedy. But like The Sopranos routinely was hilarious. They had so many funny moments, but it wasn't a comedy. It was a drama, you know, like,
interesting,
but Sinners, they'll be interesting. I think it has a
And also think the other thing that is interesting is that it could have passed as a musical.
Definitely.
Right. Because there were musical moments.
I would regard it as a musical, a horror slash, you know, because whenever I list the movies that I watch, I'm like, what genre it is? And I call that, that's a horror slash musical to me, because there's a lot of musical elements to it. There's musical set pieces in the movie.
I saw Sinners as this beautiful onion.
Yeah, it's great.
And these layers that made it up. And one of the layers, which certainly wasn't the biggest outside layer, it was more of its kind of pip, was the fact that it was this beautiful homage to music.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
That was definitely its layer that just gave it this extra, like, fucking integrity and weight and substance.
I think that's why it's done so well, is because it has. That's why I'm loving these original movies that are coming out. Yeah. Is that even though that is essentially From Dusk Till Dawn in, Jim Crow era America. Sure.
But it's got more to it.
It's got more to it, 100%. The whole musical aspect. Is the, like you said, the fucking center of it. Like, it's so good. Oh, my God. I actually want to watch it again.
There was little rumors of it potentially coming back to cinemas for Halloween, but I haven't seen the confirmation of that.
Cool.
But speaking of musicals, speaking of things, and potential Oscar noms and all this shit, how did you guys see the trailer for Kiss of the Spider-Woman?
I haven't seen the trailer.
Because I haven't. But I know that it is a musical, and I know that it has some trans themes to it.
Yeah, it's a prison set. Like, I know the book is set in a prison.
Yeah, so I was going to say, hey, have you seen we're getting another trans musical?
Well, William Hurt won Best Actor for it originally. For that movie. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
So we've seen a movie already.
Yeah, so the first movie came out, I think, in 1980.
Okay.
I'll tell you now. But I think it's like set in like a...
And was it a musical then?
No.
Okay, so it's now become a musical. It's got Jennifer Lopez in it.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's about as far as I know.
Yeah.
Okay, but we don't have to talk about too much about
1985 was the original film.
Yeah.
Was it based on something?
Yeah, it's based on a book.
Okay.
It's one of those stream of consciousness books. It's hard to read. Yeah.
Like a beat poet.
But 1980s, I haven't seen the original. But I remember it being set in like a Brazilian, it was set in Brazil.
Okay.
So yeah.
Another South American trans musical coming our way, coming to Oscar categories everywhere.
Yeah, for sure.
But we'll see. I love the idea of someone just writing like a crappy book and then them just, not crappy, but I mean like crappy grammar and structure and them just saying, no, it's stream of consciousness.
No, but it's that book is like a classic. Like,
to me, it feels like it's going to be a Stieg Larsson kind of spy espionage in the darkness of Scandinavia. It just kisses and women.
That's why you associate it.
I haven't heard anything about it, but if someone were to say, oh, Kiss of the Spider Woman, I'd think,
oh, it's a new Stieg Larsson.
Is this the fourth book?
Yeah.
All right. G-Force, any others?
Let me check.
In the meantime, I can also say, hey, have you guys seen that trailer for Mercy?
I did see that.
Mercy?
It's the new. It's the new Chris Pratt.
Christopher Prattleton.
Oh my God! Yeah, I saw the I know the premise. Yeah,
and
it looks a little sort of minority
Rebecca
reporty.
Ferguson.
I love her, but Chris Pratt's been so lame lately.
Yeah, it has
like,
me.
It looks like he's playing against type, which is good. Mm. Like he's not being the goofball that he usually is. He's usually just the.
He looks quite serious. In
yes.
This. Yeah.
I watched the trailer and I thought this would make a good video game.
Oh.
Not a good movie.
Not a good movie.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing is he is a guy who's on trial.
Yeah, he's fighting for his life.
But he's literally like in like a chair that he can't get out of, and he has to prove his own innocence.
Yeah.
And he's given access to. Like everything, surveillance cameras and everything that happened around the time of what the crime he's accused of.
Yeah.
Which sounds like a great video
game. It's a very Twilight Zone.
Yes.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Did you guys ever watch The Tomorrow War?
No.
It was.
Oh, I never watched it. Yeah.
It was this
Chris Pratt does
huge,
an Edge of Tomorrow.
Big.
Yeah.
Somewhat. Basically. Somewhat.
Okay. Edge of Tomorrow is so good. Oh my God.
Oh, it's incredible.
It's
dude.
So good. Fucking hell. Sorry, carry on.
It was one of those huge budget movies that the world never saw because it was a big tentpole for Amazon.
Yeah.
I really liked it.
I heard it was okay.
It had a cool, strong concept, and its Pip was the relationship between him and his daughter, and that actually held quite strong.
Because it's like he goes forward in time.
Yeah,
like
they
recruit people from the past.
It's quite a cool premise, which is like, imagine the Super Bowl happens now, okay?
Okay.
And in the halftime show, this fucking portal opens up and these soldiers come out because they know that this is the most watched sort of moment in America. Yeah. And they say, there's a war that's going to happen in the future and we're running out of fucking manpower. We need to recruit people from now to help fight in this war.
Mm. That's cool.
It's cool.
It's a fun premise.
It's cool. And it's like not a bad movie.
Okay.
Anyways. Okay.
It's over on Prime, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah,
it's Prime
I'd imagine
video.
It'll be there for the end of time because they're like, we need to get all the juice out of this lemon.
Hey, did you guys see we got a teaser trailer for Invincible season 4?
Okay, you guys dig
shit.
That? I've
I
never
love
yeah,
it.
Invincible's cool.
It's
I need
badass.
To I need to finish the last season.
Season 3 was really good.
Yeah, I heard it. I think
really
you told
good.
Me it gets like fucking like
yeah.
like fucked up. Like,
it gets intense.
This is an animated show.
Animated show, also on Prime, based on a comic book.
Great voice cast. Jeez,
excellent voice cast.
Yeah, Steven Yeun, J.K. Simmons.
Yeah,
I think Sandra Oh as
yes,
well. Yeah. I loved that show.
And it's a little bit like
really
The Boys.
Good.
It sort of pokes fun at the superhero.
I prefer it more to The Boys.
Yes.
It's more serious than The Boys.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it is.
That's cool.
Based on a comic book by the same guy who created The Walking Dead.
Yes. What's his name? It's not Vaughn. I know. Yeah.
I can't remember his name either, but it doesn't matter. But it's like the teaser trailer. They have this like format for their teaser trailers where it's the main character, Mark, sitting in a diner talking to someone. They've done it for season 2, 3, and now for 4 again.
Oh, cool. Very
and like
cool.
In the first one, it was them like making fun of the fact that people are complaining about it taking so long.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like the animation takes like a lot, like it's like fourth wall
breaking.
Yeah, because like animation takes a long time.
I remember the gap from season 1 to 2 was like
it was
long.
It was
years,
like
3 years. Yeah. And people were like, why haven't we gotten the new season yet? And the creators were like, guys, it takes a long time, you know? That's why like with Across the Spider-Verse?
Yeah.
Is that the second one?
Yes.
Yeah. The I remember initially it was supposed to be cool. It's out now. The next one will be a year later.
Yeah.
And they're like, guys, it's not possible.
Yeah.
Like, we need to work on it. And I mean, you saw the fruit of the labor, of their labor, how good it was.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. It looks, I think it'll be cool. It's a good show.
Yeah, it's a great show. Cool. Cool. Should we move on?
Yeah. Should we get on to...
Let's do it.
Should we do movies first?
Sure.
Sure.
But I also don't want to shit on it too heavily, but him.
Yeah, I didn't like it. I just didn't find it very... Look, I dig the whole what they were trying to do. Like, you know, sport and horror. I've never seen that done before.
Yeah.
And I just felt it was style over substance.
Mm-hmm. I could see that.
I just felt that characters were annoying. Characters weren't interesting. I felt like it had this big like canvas of cool ideas, but it didn't really do much with it to get to the end. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like it didn't cross It didn't get the touchdown. Oh, that's okay. So fucking lame.
No, but it works. So the movie Him is in cinemas around the world, including the Bioscope. It is produced by Jordan Peele. And it is about a upcoming but very exciting prospect of a football player who is able to go to this kind of special training camp, and the movie takes place over 4 days as he goes into this kind of fucked up kind of like world, so to speak, to get this kind of specialized training from who is considered to be the greatest player of all time.
Yeah, it's like an extreme boot camp.
It's like this kind of extreme boot camp. But there's elements of horror throughout. We were lucky enough it's actually a bit of a coincidence, really, that many years ago, through an exchange program, I got to know Zach Eckers, who is a writer who has gone on to be one of the writers of this movie. Yeah. And it was interesting to hear from him that his original ideas and plans with his co-writer, Skip Bronchi, who I will say it again, has got the coolest fucking name in the world.
Skip Bronchi.
that they did see the end result and know that quite a lot of their original ideas had been changed. We were talking earlier that it felt like the movie perhaps had a little bit of messing and muddling. And I think what we've touched on many times with the Bioscope is that when we talk of people like Paul Thomas Anderson and how great their movies are, it's often because they are the writers of their movies. Yeah. And so they get to fully realize this idea, even if it is really fucked up.
Yeah.
It's a potent energy that makes for a potent, unique, cool movie.
I mean,
and so perhaps what's happened here is that an original, really cool idea could have been a bit messed with. And the moment you mess with quite a bold, unique idea, which is how do you make a sports horror, get a confused product.
So the thing is, there were elements there where it could have been like, I could see what they were going for as well. It's the whole Whiplash mentor student vibe, what I mean? Where like the mentor is so extreme and so fucking like, I'm trying to get the best out of you, but like he makes him do fucked up shit, And with him, they're going for that as well. But I just felt that it just felt like it didn't go far enough, It felt like it was always like holding back, and it's giving us cool surreal imagery, but it doesn't really do anything with that cool surreal imagery. Like there's a sequence, the sauna sequence was cool. I don't know which sauna sequence you're thinking of.
Well, so yeah, without giving much away, it's when he's in the fucking sauna.
Okay, yeah. So there's
no one else to say it without giving anything away.
But like there was just
a very cool play on like blocking. And
okay,
what,
yeah, yeah. And, no, I know which one you're talking
what
about.
What gets revealed?
Right. Yeah,
it's cool.
So like, yeah, I mean, it's just also. When the most recent trailer for it came out, I was just like, oof.
I know it lost a few people with the trailer.
Yeah, because also the trailer felt long. And it's bad when the trailer feels long. Yeah. I was just like,
I think, let's perhaps not harp on too much about it. But I think it's interesting when you have a film that's got lots of meat. It's got interesting ideas. It's trying something unique. If it doesn't land it, fuck, then it just doesn't land.
But
in your opinion, it doesn't.
Yeah.
But
look for...
Let's make these movies is what I'm trying to...
Exactly,
Let's watch them to form your own opinion on whether you think it's cool or not.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's not that it's bad. It's just that
it's preference.
It's preference-y, but it's bold and it's interesting. And
it sounds like thematically interesting, but it doesn't necessarily execute those themes very well.
Yeah, so but that's the thing, though. I mean, that's the beauty of film is that... media literacy and stuff like that is that we all have our own preferences.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like a movie that I love, Cole might think is absolute dog shit.
Yeah. And a lot of it comes down to your feeling on the day.
Exactly.
Your readiness to take on that kind of shit.
I mean, there's certain movies that like recent movies that we haven't spoken on air, but like where you loved and I'm like, really? That one? You know? And then like I've a movie I love and you're like, really? That but one?
Also, there have been times when I've watched a movie, not liked it, watched it again months later and really loved it. I didn't like Fury Road the first time I saw it.
Really?
I didn't like it at all.
Wow.
And then I watched it again and I was like, oh.
Yeah, you see, like there's one movie in particular. I mean, I didn't hate it. I thought it was fine. Lady Bird, when I first watched it, that was like you said. Big Oscar contender. And I was like, it's good. I don't see why it's so good. Watched it again like 2 years later. I was like, this movie is incredible. Like it's because you're watching it at a specific point in your life where it makes sense. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like there's certain movies where I remember being really good and then I watch it years later. I'm like, oh, it wasn't that good. You know what I mean?
And
like,
sometimes I've had the opportunity, well, not sometimes, most of the time I've had the opportunity to watch the movie early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
And now I'm getting, and I've spoken about this on the show, that now this year I've managed to get into more of the exhibitor screenings, which fucking I always should have been in. But it actually took me knocking on the door to go, hi, please can I see this movie before?
Yeah.
Oh, you have exhibitor screenings.
Yeah.
And
it's just because old school sort of setup has been, let's give one to Stir Kennicle, let's give one to New Metro. They often watch them in their own cinemas.
Yeah.
Mm.
So Stir Kennicle will watch it at a Stir Kennicle. And I've gone, please can I attend these?
Yeah.
And I've now been attending them.
Oh, man.
And and sometimes, and what I also find interesting is when I tell you guys and other people about the movie, if I get more and more excited every time I talk about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the one thing I can say is like I left Begonia going like, it's cool.
Nice.
But then the more I talk about it to people, I'm like, it's fucking rad.
I knew it was going to be cool.
The more I speak about it, because it is a difficult movie for quite a lot of the time. But its ultimate payoff is cool. Cool. And it gets me more excited every time.
Cool. I didn't know it was a remake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Save the Green Planet.
Yes.
It's a Korean film, yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't know that either until I came out and someone was like, it's a Korean film.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is the Yorgos Lanthimos movie, which is coming at the end of this month.
Yeah.
Tickets will be on sale soon.
Very cool.
Okay. Can we chat a little bit about Victoria Beckham?
Yeah.
Yeah, do it.
Just because I think there's interesting things to talk about. And then we'll close off on Alien Earth.
Is it the same filmmaker, is it the same guys behind the David Beckham docu?
I'm not 100% sure, but I would imagine it is.
Okay.
It's also, it feels a little bit more like a female voice that chimes in on one or two occasions.
Okay.
So I'm not 100% sure, but it's definitely obviously of the same world.
Mm.
I think there is a product now for a famous person to consider a well-timed and perfectly positioned Netflix docu about themselves.
Nice.
To get certain things across, which I think is cool.
Okay.
Maybe it's in line of a new comeback tour or there's like a reason for it. But there is no question that this elevates a certain person's opinion in the court of public opinion if there is a good, successful Netflix docu-series about you. And after the success of the David Beckham one, there was definitely an argument that like, we now needed to hear the Victoria
Beckham side.
Because there was a famous memeable moment in the David Beckham one which challenged Victoria Beckham, which is where she said, I come from this working class background.
Yeah.
And he was like, and he's like, what? And he puts his head in through the window. Like, everybody knows.
What car did your dad drive? It like, doesn't matter. What car did your dad drive?
And she's like, it was a Rolls Royce.
He's like, thank you. And he just
leaves. And he closes the door. Now, when you watch it, you are a little more skeptical about what she's saying because you know that with in front of a camera, she's going to want to tell you what she wants you to hear.
Mm.
And I think the answer there is that it's somewhere in the middle. It's not that she grew up poor. It's just that the family started at very small means.
Right.
And the dad worked very hard and built up this kind of electrical wholesaling business.
Okay.
Which started with them apparently like around the dinner table making up electrical parts.
Right, cool.
And then selling it. Then it obviously got to this point where the dad could buy a Rolls Royce.
Mm.
And they also, she says, oh, we, you know, my parents still live in the house that we grew up in. And you see them in the house. You're like, that's a fucking nice house.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a old English castle-y looking house.
Well, that's why she was called Posh Spice.
Yeah. No, and so what I think is interesting, and I think it's worth your time to watch, what I think is interesting is you should watch throughout and go, this is what she is choosing to show you. And she is dictating this 100%. And the main focus is she wants you to take her seriously in the world of fashion.
Okay.
So it is all about her putting on the main sort of arc of the three episodes, which fly by, is about them putting on this particular show at Fashion Week, which should kind of help. They're milking it a bit, but it's like it's to kind of elevate her fashion career and kind of save it, because it turns out that throughout their sort of business opulence in the beginning, they were actually losing a lot of money because she was just not very good at business, which isn't to say that she wasn't good at designing fashion,
right?
But it's interesting that you are watching the show to try and legitimize her as a fashion designer.
Okay.
And you can see her self-consciousness throughout going, nobody wants to take me seriously. And so she's using this vehicle to have you take her seriously.
Okay.
Very little to do with the personal scandals of, you know, like when the husband goes over to fucking Madrid and sleeps with someone.
Right.
Which obviously got touched on in his docu, but you could see they very carefully acknowledged it but didn't admit to it.
Yeah, I enjoyed that docu, though. Yeah.
So it doesn't touch on any of that.
Mm.
I found it interesting that there was very little about her as a mother. She obviously acknowledges and shows you that she was a mother, but it's got nothing to do with her home life.
Right. Yeah.
And what it means to be a mother, which is fine. I actually quite like that because let's not have... Let's tell a professional, ambitious woman story. So I think that's all cool.
Is she a producer on it?
I don't know. But you get, it's got her hands all over it. It's like it's 100%. Yeah,
that's where I always worry about when a documentary on its subject, when they're listed as one of the producers.
Yeah.
That's where you go, okay, just how biased is it? How much are they leaving out? Like, even though The Last Dance, I think Michael Jordan was an executive producer on that. Yeah. The Last Dance is about the Chicago Bulls dynasty, right?
Yeah.
It's not, people are like, oh, it's a Michael Jordan documentary series. It's not. It's about them as a team.
Sure.
But obviously he was the focal point of that team.
Yeah.
But
I still love the point that someone once made, which was that the Harry Potter films, like the Harry Potter story, the first three or whatever, is set around the 90s. And they're like, I just can't believe that at no point in the Harry Potter world that none of them were like, wow, the Chicago Bulls are really having a fucking great season.
I remember seeing that. It's so funny.
I love that.
But there's certain documentaries, like, I mean, even to a point, like, you got to, like, I understand with the Victoria Beckham thing, like, as long as what we're focusing on is interesting and at least there's some semblance of humanity or truth to it, then cool. But there's times where...
If you are being vulnerable. Because the thing is, I don't think you can get that kind of access to those people without them controlling it.
Yes.
Yeah, at least...
Then you get this kind of tabloidy fucking thing.
So that...
And you see those docies every now and again and you know that person's not involved.
Yeah.
And then you don't get what you feel to be a truth.
Yeah, so I mean, like...
Not the truth, but a truth.
There's what was the one documentary that was actually really well done in terms of... There's the Charlie Sheen one I haven't watched yet that just came out. I think that's Netflix as well.
Yeah.
But I mean, the one quite recently, the Michael J. Fox one was incredible.
Yeah.
But so we spoke about it earlier, the John Candy one.
Yes.
So obviously John Candy has been dead for many years now. And if you're not familiar with John Candy, he is, you know, Uncle Buck, yep. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
A little bit of Home Alone.
Home Alone.
Cool Runnings.
Cool Runnings famously. Yeah. So he came from SCTV, which was the Canadian SNL, which a lot of people, if you've seen it, regard that way better than Golden Era Saturday Night Live in the 70s. Yeah. But anyway, so... when I started watching that documentary, so it is quite schmaltzy because it's a celebration of who he was as a person, not just as an entertainer. And John Candy famously was like a sweetheart, like an absolute sweetheart. And it's a really touching documentary. But the thing that like, I was like, whoa, okay, this is a big deal, was Bill Murray never does sit down interviews with like in any documentaries. He wasn't there for a lot of SNL documentaries or even the Kaufman, the comedian.
Andy Kaufman.
He wasn't like involved in any of those. This, the opening like shot or frame or talking head is him.
Okay.
And usually, I mean, he does inject some humor into it, but you can see he's emotional talking about John Candy because he's like, the thing that he says that like broke me was he was like, I miss him. Like, I get up every day and I like, I miss him. Like, and they were close. Like, even though we've only saw them in, I think, one movie together in Stripes.
Mm.
Like, but.
Where is this film available?
Prime.
And what is it called?
John Candy, I Like Me.
I Like Me.
And that's a great line from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. There's a scene where Steve Martin is berating him because he's like been so annoying. It's like quite early in the film. And like he's just shitting on him, and it's just like so hurtful. And then like his comeback is like, sure, I talk a lot, like sure, but I also listen too much. And he's like, I like me because I'm a good guy and stuff. And it's such a beautiful scene.
Nice.
But it's interesting with these documentaries because also another big one that's coming in January that's like very controversial is it's the most money Amazon has ever spent on a documentary, $40 million, which is insane. Jeez. On a Melania Trump documentary.
Oh boy.
That'll be interesting.
I have no idea if it's going to be like damning, I doubt it will be, but like that's.
She was literally a prostitute at one point.
Right.
Isn't that how they met?
I don't know.
Sounds plausible.
Yeah.
But I mean, she literally was a sex worker.
That's crazy.
I'm like, I don't want to fucking put that out in the world if I'm wrong.
Yeah, because Trump will come for you.
But I mean that she was like a high class, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
But she was an escort.
Jesus.
It was in the world of the dude who killed himself.
Epstein. It
was through that world and that network that he found her.
Jesus.
Yes.
That he got to meet her.
So that'll be an interesting documentary.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I do apologize if I put false information out into the world, but you go and Google it for yourself.
Fake news. You're fake news.
Yeah. Like the climate hoax
that
he just recently spoke about.
Fucking hell.
Okay. Let's close off Alien Earth.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about Alien Earth.
Well done on jamming that into the conversation.
Wedge it in there.
Yeah.
It's been a bit of the reaction to it has been kind of mixed.
Yeah, I've seen that.
From the fan base. I liked it.
Cool.
I think it's pretty cool.
That's trying something different, right?
It is different for Alien, which is fine. Like, you can do that. They don't all need to be remakes of the first two movies, which seems to be what people want. But that's, you know, neither here nor there. But we kind of went over it last time, but we'll give a little back of the box. It's set just before the original Alien.
Yes.
We're told the world is basically controlled by, I think, four major corporations. Mm. There's like, even like the countries are essentially controlled by them.
Yeah.
And a spaceship owned by one corporation crashes into the area of another. So it becomes this kind of like race between these two corporations to try and get control. Because it turns out there's a bunch of aliens on this.
Yeah.
A bunch of different kinds of aliens.
Which
not
is
just
fun.
Xenomorphs.
That's exciting.
Yes, it's kind of like some of the most fun stuff in the show. Yeah. They make an eyeball really scary.
Yeah, yeah.
The eyeball alien is so cool.
Yeah,
the eyeball alien.
So she's like an eyeball with tentacles.
Oh, cool.
And then it like latches onto something, rips its eye out, and like puts its tentacles in and like takes control of
it.
Yeah,
it's like a host.
So it's just like a normal looking thing with this one like bulging eye.
Yeah.
Hectic.
And they managed to make a sheep like the scariest monster in
it
years.
It stares at you.
Yeah, it's just a sheep.
Because it's
like
a smart alien as well. So like,
there's you learn that it's like sentient.
Yeah, there's a sequence where one of the androids is like watching it, and like it's just like it's focusing on the people.
Yes.
And it's like just like watching them. Like it's crazy.
As like someone walks across, it just sits in and like watches, like tracks them as they go. Yeah. And it's like, whoa, that thing.
Yeah, it's fucking.
It's really
scary.
Really
that's
cool.
It's always funny when you can see something that shouldn't be scary that is scary.
Exactly.
Like in the Japanese original Dark Order. You are shit scared of a little Japanese girl in a yellow raincoat with a red Hello Kitty bag. That becomes the fucking scariest thing in the world.
Yeah, 100%.
And you're like, oh my God, horror is incredible in that regard. Mm.
Carpets, The Shining, fucking hell.
Like, oh, that's a carpet.
The just the wheels rolling on like the floor and then onto the carpet and no thank you.
Oh, incredible.
Yeah. No thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, no thank you. Hey.
Mm-mm. Yeah, okay, and at the same time that this is happening, one of these corporations is basically trying to create immortality by putting human minds into robotic bodies. And their first experiment, so they take a bunch of kids who are like terminal, they have some sort of terminal illness, and they put them into these robot bodies. Mm. But because robot bodies never age, they're being put into the bodies of adults.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that kind of like fucks with them. And so it becomes this thing of, some people really don't like it, but I liked it for the most part of, you have all these adults who are children and they're acting like children.
Cool.
And some of them are really good at it and some of them aren't. Some of them like take it too far and they're like, you know, these kids are supposed to be like 12, 13 years old, but they're behaving like 5-year-olds. You know, and it's a bit
they
like,
sort of don't quite get the age.
Yes, but some of them do a really good job with it.
I saw something funny, which was like, when you're a little kid and you think your cancer's like turning around, but then John Cena arrives at the hospital and you're like, fuck!
Jeez, like, that's fucking dark. but then most of it takes place on this like island compound thing where these, you know, child robots are, where they've now brought all these new aliens to as well. And things go awry as they do.
Yeah, of course.
Cool. Yeah, but I think it's really good. I think the cast is mostly good. The one dude...
Where is it available?
Disney. Disney. The one dude who plays a character named Morrow. He's the cyborg dude with like the robot arm.
Yes, yeah.
Incredible dude.
Yeah.
He's the best character. Him and Timothy Oliphant.
I love Timothy Oliphant. Yeah.
Timothy Oliphant is like the android.
Yeah.
He's Kirsch. But this dude named, his name is, I don't know how to pronounce this guy's name, Babao Cisse, something like that.
Whoa.
But he's awesome. He's so good. I love that he's like physically very unassuming because he's very normal looking. He's just like a plain dude. He's got a little bit of a paunch, but he's also like super capable, like... Nice. Total badass. He's cool. Awesome. He's a dick, but he's awesome.
Yeah, one thing I love about the whole one thing that's interesting is because in the world of Alien, we've only ever known as Weyland-Yutani. Weyland-Yutani, which is the corporation constantly trying to get the Xenomorph and, you know, fucking everything up. So it's like so cool.
And it's
that,
their ship that crashes.
It's so cool that when you find out that it's not just them,
it's
three other corporations that control the planet, which is like crazy. Like, so it's cool that they introduce new lore into the whole show.
Perhaps the idea is that then one or two of these corporations have kind of weeded out the others.
So these were
the ones that were in the original.
But also, like, the cool thing is we don't know that, like, in the future, we don't know if it is only Weyland-Yutani now. We don't know if it's now split up.
Or,
Earlier in the shift, you were talking about the tapes that you had growing up. You had beta tapes and VHS.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that there have been those competitions in time.
Yeah, like format wars.
Yeah, HD, DVD versus Blu-ray.
And to quote the one dude from Tropic Thunder, when they're walking through the jungle.
I remember that,
Like, and at the end of the day, it really came down to gamers and porn.
Yeah, that's so true.
as to which one. But in the case of VHS, it was porn.
Right.
The porn industry got together and chose VHS over the beta tape. There wasn't any reason why the one was better than the other. And that's what gave VHS its kind of its big break.
Fascinating.
And
Beta was high quality though.
But yeah. And I think it was
smaller tapes. Same.
It was the same with it was either going to be Blu-ray or HD.
HD DVD.
HD DVD. They were the same sort of
idea.
Yeah,
it was like a red box instead of a Blu-ray.
And it was a combination of gamers and porn because it was what the porn DVDs, the porn Blu-rays were going to be, as well as which of the two PlayStation is going to put in the next PlayStation, and they chose Blu-ray.
Yep. Mm.
And so that's what just won them the race.
Yeah, and Xbox chose it as well eventually. It's
probably
crazy.
Somebody sucked someone off or gave them a lot of money in a briefcase.
Blu-ray, wasn't it originally developed by Sony? I think
it's possible,
was.
Possible,
Okay, well then that makes sense. Nobody had to. Service anyone.
Yes.
All right. Magic. Thank you, guys.
Sick. Mm. Thank you.
Oh, and I guess the last thing to acknowledge is poor old Diane Keaton.
Oh, yeah.
Just to go back to a little hey, did you guys see?
Yes.
Unfortunately, she passed away.
Right.
And so we are going to do a knit-in.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Of the First Wives Club.
Okay.
It's going to be the first weekend of November.
Mm, cool.
As a way to pay homage. I wanted, ideally, one should screen Annie Hall.
Yeah.
But it's just got Woody Allen all over it.
Yeah. It's a shame because she's so great in it.
Yeah. She's perfect in it. And it, like, that's her iconic look and
style
and character. And it's so much about her. Her original name, her original surname is Hall.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
funny enough.
It's a shame because it's a great, it's actually a really fucking good film.
Yeah. It is
cool.
She's
so good in it.
I just don't.
Yeah, you don't want to touch that
Woody
can
Allen.
Of worms. Yeah.
Magic.
Yeah.
Magic. Right.
Thank you, guys.
Cheers, guys.
Go get some sleep, P-Dog.
Thank you.
We never acknowledged it, but you were up all night over the weekend shooting.
I was at a party. Truth.
Yeah, Lord.
Oh, this was the truth party that was up till sort of 6 in the morning.
So, yeah, thankfully I didn't stay that long, but I had been, like, broken from previous, like, shoots and parties that I had to go to. I was in Durban last weekend for a party I had to shoot at Origin till 4 a.m.
Lord.
Okay. Did I ever tell you the Do You Jawl story?
No.
Okay, we'll close on that. I think I'd already moved out of home, but I was at my parents' house for some reason. And during the day, they had technicians or people come to sort of fix the house.
Yeah.
And there was one dude that, if it was the alarm system or the garage doors or something like that. And this dude, I was at the gate, and he said to me, he said, "Do you jawl?" And I was like, "What?" He's like, "Do you jawl? Do you go to truth?" And I'm like, "No."
Yeah.
At this point, I'm like in rock bands, and I'm very much
"Do you jawl, B?"
And he says, "No, I thought I saw you at Truth. I thought I know you from Truth." And I was like, "What?" I just love that. And I just forever loved that opener. Do you jawl?
Do you jawl?
And I was like, I mean, I jawl.
But what do you mean jawl?
But I don't jawl with you, bro.
Yeah.
We don't have the same jawl.
So it's not. So did you ever go to the original Truth?
No.
So that was in the South.
Truth.
So original Truth was in the South. It might have been somewhere before that. I don't know. But the original one was like fucking dodgy. Oh, like there were always constantly drug raids and shootouts. And it was just rough. And then, they moved it to Midrand. So that's where I went. And
one of those nightclubs for the longest time was you could see it on the highway on your way to Pretoria. And it was to the right, and it's now like a Kuro school.
Oh,
you know, that like sort of private school that's a little more economical.
If these walls could talk, my brother. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what I'm saying. These little kids are like doing the spelling bee where like someone was probably schnaffing a line of coke off some dude's asshole. Like
just a party,
that,
man.
Just that, like, 90s.
Yeah.
Just
rave.
You know when there were drugs like Mandrax?
Yeah, fuck.
Like, nobody talks about smoking buttons anymore. Yeah. Like, it's just, that's not a thing. But that probably happened close to where, like, the swings are at the Kuro school.
Bray, do you mustard gas, eh? Oh, jeez, like.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, all my right. God. Good
okay,
times.
Okay, no more jewels.
Yeah, no more jewels.
Let's have sleeps.
Yeah.
Cheers, guys.
Jewels. Bye.